Rat Pack, where you at?
Hey, what's going on? It's Thursday, September 12th. This is The Rant. I'm Jeff, and let's talk some football, baby. FTNFantasy.com, promo code RATPACK for 10% off. Continuing to roll out new features all the time, because it is a brand new website as of this year, and we're still a young company. Like, I actually did get a voicemail from somebody. I'm not going to play it because it wasn't like a contribute to the show type of voicemail. It was more like a customer service of, when are you getting an app? And I'll tell you this, like, flat out, apps are expensive. We're still a startup. I don't know. I can tell you this. Our site is optimized for mobile. It's actually a better experience on mobile than it is on desktop. So you can always use your browser, but no time soon for an app, I will tell you that. But enough about all that. Let's get into what we're going to discuss today. We have some injury report stuff to get to. I briefly want to mention how to handle tonight. I'm assuming you're listening to this before the Miami-Buffalo game, so we'll get into that. I do want to talk wide receiver cornerback stuff as well. A bunch of shadow situations that could impact us going forward into week two. Though I will say that that's more a DFS conversation, because remember, in season-long fantasy football, we're trying to beat one opponent each week. Now, you might be in an all play or a points only, or you might play a game against an opponent, a game against the median. But for the most part, most of us are playing against one opponent every week. In those instances, I don't like to get too granular. I love to play the averages. I don't want to play the ceiling. I want to play the midpoint of my players. And so I'm not going to get too in the weeds with coverage and things like that. In DFS, if we're trying to win a tournament, we're not playing against one other lineup. We're playing against lots of other, hundreds of thousands potentially of other lineups. So we do have to be more granular. We also have the added component of salaries that we just don't have to navigate in season-long fantasy football. So it's a little bit different there. So that's what that conversation really deals with. I can't tell you how many times over the years I've had people freaking out over wide receiver cornerback matchups for redraft leagues, and it just is not worth our effort or energy to get that granular with things in that format. Let me quickly talk about Miami Buffalo. So again, if you're listening to this and it's like Friday morning, you probably can skip forward a few minutes, but there are some moving pieces. I know people are going to have questions here, and I wanted to address those. So Raheem Mostert is out. We did get good news, though, regarding Mostert. Even though he's not playing in this one, doesn't seem like this is a long-term injury. Ian Rappaport saying he's not expected to go to injured reserve or anything like that. So that is good. He should be back. If it's not next week, maybe the week after, we'll see. But you don't have him tonight. Now, as far as Devon Achane is concerned, they're going to work him out in pregame warmups and determine whether or not he can play. I can tell you, I did see video footage from the beat writers yesterday of Achane in practice. It went down as a limited practice, but he was moving pretty well. I would say he looks to be on the right side of questionable. Now, you can never guarantee anything. You know, Christian McCaffrey certainly showed us that last week, but he does look to be on the right side of questionable. So I've gotten this one question over and over. I did want to address this quickly. Where would you rank Jeff Wilson if Achane doesn't play? Now, I don't really like the question, not because, oh, I'm a jerk and I don't want to answer your question. It's because what's the point of the question, I think, is what I try to get at. The point of the question, I know you want to be prepared for all angles, but ultimately rankings are going to be updated in advance. So if you have Jeff Wilson on your roster, you're just kind of ready to go, that whole prepare for the worst but hope for the best. If I say, oh, Jeff Wilson's RB6, like, you're going to get this artificial inflated sense of hope, right? And that may not come to fruition. So it's ultimately like wasted energy to do something like that. Will Jeff Wilson be playable if Achane doesn't go? Yeah, of course he will. And maybe Jalen Wright will be as well. But we really won't know. And honestly, given my lean here, I think Achane's just going to play. And if he plays, I would not do the whole like, oh, well, you know, maybe they were. No, we're not going to do any maybes here. If he's good enough to go, he's good enough to get the full workload. And he does not need, remember, Achane doesn't need 35. He doesn't need a Derrick Henry workload to be effective here. He can be very effective on 12 touches. So if Achane goes, which I think he will, he'll be a top 10 option. If he doesn't go, we will adjust things over at FTNFantasy.com regarding Jeff Wilson and Jalen Wright. But as of right now, I have Jeff Wilson just on the outside of flex territory. I'm not convinced that we're going to see enough of him to warrant using him if Achane is on the field. Now, I do think that brings me to something else that's really, 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 really important. And it was a theme that actually came up in the offseason, even on this podcast, but definitely on the radio show. People think I don't like keeper questions, which is a bunch of crap. Keeper questions are very important. Keeper decisions are very important. These are draft picks we get to make before the draft starts, so we have to think them through. But the problem is making a keeper decision in May, when our keeper decision doesn't actually have to be filed until late August, is kind of putting a cart in front of the horse. You know, hey, you could have rolled into keeper season with somebody like, I don't know, Puka Nacua. And in May, you're thinking, oh, you know, this is automatic. And then he misses all of camp. You might have been rethinking things. Or worst case scenario, let's say, and I have an update on Puka Nacua in a minute. Let's say you have the keeper of all keepers, and in May you are locked in. You've made your decision. And then that guy gets hurt and is out for the season. It happens. It's wasted energy at that point. That's the main point. It's not that I hate keeper questions. It's that I hate doing something out of order. Like I'm an algorithm guy, right? The projection model and all that. I am very much in favor of doing things in the right order, you know, in the right sequence. And making a decision like that in May is not in the right sequence. It's the same thing in season. Now, it's a much more compacted timeline, but making a start-sit decision on Tuesday or Wednesday is pointless. It's really pointless. And what I will see sometimes people do, they will run themselves in circles because they will refresh my rankings page. And hey, I appreciate that you're on the rankings page at FTNFantasy.com very frequently, but they will refresh it and refresh it and refresh it and then sort of nitpick every minor little change. Projections and rankings are going to change. What I do on Tuesday, that initial set, that evolves. And it's changed, honestly, right now, it's changed like 15 times. And there are players who are close. Like there were two players who were brought up, Justin Fields and Matthew Stafford. And in my initial ranking, Stafford was ahead. In the latest update, Fields is ahead. But you know what? They're separated by half a point. And the person was like, well, I thought you said you didn't like Fields. And it's like, no, I still don't like Fields. Trust me. I watched the game. He does not look good. He looks like they're covering him up to not make mistakes. And that also is a bit of an indictment of him. He's still a good runner, don't get me wrong, but he doesn't look like a good starting quarterback in the NFL. So no, I don't like him. And I think Matthew Stafford is much better at football. But the problem is Matthew Stafford isn't going to run. Justin Fields is. I don't really want to have to rely on Justin Fields, but the projections have him just a tick ahead. I run the projections again, and guess what? Stafford could be ahead. But if we go and we look at that on Monday or on Tuesday, on Wednesday, on Thursday, on Friday, on Saturday, we're going to run ourselves wild, like ragged, when the only time that it really matters, the only time we have to make a decision is Sunday, and really it's around like 12:30 Eastern. Before lineups lock at 1 o'clock, well, I mean, obviously, if you have the 4 o'clock window or whatever, but you get my point. That hour to half an hour before lineup, before kickoff at 1 o'clock Eastern, that's when it matters. That's when my rankings are done. I'm not going to go any further with the 1 o'clock games. Now, this year, fortunately, because the back end system is super fast, I can do the updates now for the 4 o'clock window for Sunday Night Football if anything crazy happens. And this past week, something crazy did happen for Monday night with Christian McCaffrey, and I was able to update those. In the past, wasn't possible with our system. Now it is. So it's awesome. But back to the original point, making a start-sit decision on Wednesday is foolish. Really is. I'm not calling you a fool, by the way, so don't get offended. It's just foolish to make that decision at that time. You're getting ahead of yourselves. You know, and I make this equate it to like going out to breakfast. Go out to breakfast. You don't order what you want for dinner. You know, you're two meals down the line. You order what you want for breakfast. You don't take a final exam in the third or fourth or fifth week of a semester. You take it after, ideally, I guess, the 15th week, unless, well, that's how it was at my college and grad school, for that matter. You don't take it in the middle of the semester is the point. So why would we make those decisions before we need to make them? There's two points where I need to make start-sit decisions in most weeks. Those two points are right before Thursday night football kickoff, if I have any players in that game. And then the other point is right before the 1 o'clock window kickoff on Sundays, one Eastern. Yeah, I realize it's 10, it's early for you West Coast folks. But still, those are the only times that we need to make decisions. Otherwise, you know what I do? Honestly, I'll plug a starting lineup in at the beginning of the week, whatever. And honestly, the whole reason why I started doing that is just in case I screw up and forget to check. So that way, at least it's a moderately good lineup. And usually I only have like one or two players that are going to be close anyway, or like one or two positions that are going to be close. And then I don't go back to it until Thursday. What's the point? You know, like in terms of the start sit, like obviously I'll put waivers in on Tuesday. That's it. So instead of doing that, driving yourself nuts, checking every minor little nuance change to rankings over and over and over, know your players, know the decisions you have to make, and then prepare yourself to make those decisions when you ultimately do need to make them. Don't make them ahead of time. All right, I'll get off the soapbox, but this is something that comes up all the time. And honestly, I'm not saying it, again, I'm not saying it to be a jerk. I'm saying it because I see fantasy managers drive themselves nuts when they don't need to do that. And by the way, when you're driving yourself nuts, you know what ultimately the byproduct is? You're going to make bad decisions. Sometimes bad decisions can work, by the way. The result ends up being good, but the decision, the process was still bad. That's why I always say process over results. I don't care about the results. The results are going to work themselves out. As long as I stick to a good process, I'm happy. And for me, that's waiting and then using rankings to make the start-sit decisions. Okay, let me rip through. So McCaffrey saying that he's preparing to play. I don't think he's going to play. We'll see. But the one interesting thing, Kyle Shanahan said that he wasn't a candidate for injured reserve. Mm-hmm. What? That was even on the table? But it sounds like, honestly, if he misses this week, maybe that's it. That's at least the indication we're getting. You got to read between the lines, though, because the 49ers are never going to be forthcoming. Puka Nacua. I had mentioned this in the FTN Discord, and now it seems like an even greater possibility. Sean McVay alluded to the chance that Nacua could be out for more than just the four games, the minimum four games. So, is that one more game? Do we see him in week 8? Do we see him week 9? Where do we see Puka Nacua ultimately? We have to be fully aware of that. And the big reason why, and I know I talked about this a little bit earlier in the week on the podcast. Oh, by the way, on Wednesdays, I'm on the FTN Fantasy Football Podcast. So make sure you subscribe to that as well. That way you get five days a week of me. But I have contractual obligations, so I have to be on that podcast feed on Wednesdays. So anyway, do you want to suck up a roster spot with Nacua? Like if you're being offered to him in a trade, and that roster spot is sucked up until at the least week 7. So halfway through the fantasy football regular season. And sure, if you have an IR spot, great. But guess what? If it's just one IR spot, I would prefer to use that much more strategically. For example, Raheem Mostert, who's out this week but is not expected to be out long term, I can use it much more strategically with him than I could with Nacua, who is expected to be out, obviously, long term. Now, if you have like 4 IR spots, whatever, fine, tuck them away, right? You know, no issues there. But if it's just one, that's a lot of real estate right there. If it's a bench spot, especially, that's a lot of real estate. I don't think I would be running out and trying to acquire Nacua right now. By the way, Cooper Kupp did move up to number 1 in my rankings. The sportsbooks now have him at -170 for over 7.5 catches. So if you drafted Cooper Kupp, nicely done. He should be very, very busy without Puka Nacua out there. Kenneth Walker did, in fact, miss practice. So we're going to keep an eye on Kenneth Walker here. first practice of the week isn't going to tell us much. The second does tell us a little bit more, but it's really that third practice of the week that we're looking for. If he gets limited today, cool. If he's DNP, it's not the end of the world. It's not time to freak out. Obviously, we will have Charbonnet waiting in the wings, but it's just, again, prepare for the worst, hope for the best in these instances. Let me see. Audric Estime went to injured reserve. That actually makes me feel a little bit better about Javonte Williams, believe it or not. So we're going to keep Javonte Williams around for the time being. I have him on a couple rosters. Josh Jacobs was limited in practice, so that's good. But also, very interesting, Matt LaFleur left the door open for Jordan Love to play this week. Now, that does not mean Jordan Love is going to play this week, and I still think it's a long shot for him to play this week. But the key is LaFleur said Jordan Love didn't necessarily need to practice in order to play this week. Interesting. Don't get your hopes up. If Malik Willis is the starter, I can't use any of the Packers players with any optimism, including Jacobs, any of them. The only exception would be a desperation Malik Willis in Superflex. That's it. Let's see. Otherwise, pretty straightforward here. We're still preparing as if Justin Fields is going to be the starter for Pittsburgh. Wide receiver wise, the Bears are banged up at wide receiver. Roma Dunze not practicing Wednesday. It's a low grade MCL. He's actually being called day to day, which is a lot better than what I had initially anticipated. I thought it was going to be more of a week to week thing. He may miss this week, but it's not a long term injury. So that's good on Dunze. Don't go dropping him. That would be a bad move. Keenan Allen has a heel issue that kept him out of practice yesterday. Again, first practice of the week isn't going to tell us much. So we got to see where he is after today. Another DNP, it would not be good, obviously. T. Higgins still not practicing, has the hamstring issues, so we'll see if that keeps him out another week. That's not a good sign to start things off here for T. Higgins. Moving over to DeAndre Hopkins. Hopefully you didn't drop DeAndre Hopkins if you drafted him. We didn't expect him in fantasy draft season to play in week one, and so the fact that he was even out there was encouraging. The role should increase this week, according to Brian Callahan. Marquise Brown not practicing for the Chiefs yesterday. That's not good because, well, he had a mini bye week. So I would have expected him to be out there. Didn't get that out of Marquise Brown. Jordan Addison not practicing. He's got an ankle issue. We'll keep an eye on him. I don't think he's not really desirable right now anyway. But Sam Darnold did play pretty good football in week one. So there is at least that. I think those are the big ones at wide receiver. As far as tight end, we figured David Njoku was going to miss some time. He's already declared out, so we have that. We're keeping an eye on Jake Ferguson on whether or not he can get back on the field. He was DNP in the first practice of the week. Dalton Schultz also missing practice for the Texans, and he's dealing with an ankle issue. So we'll see what ends up happening with some of those guys, but that's the latest on the injury front. Of course, I'll talk some more injuries on the show tomorrow, and we'll do a quick game preview for all of the remaining games, along with a quick takeaway or set of takeaways from Thursday Night Football. Okay, so let's move over to wide receiver cornerback stuff. So I studied all the shadow situations. I do this every single week, and I update the shadow coverage matrix over at ftnfantasy.com. It shows you all the shadow coverage situations, along with the percentage of routes covered, and then the statistics in coverage for each player. Shadow situations are never going to be 100%. We did have one that was pretty darn close this past week, but we also had a lot of shadow situations. And I'm trying to figure out exactly what that means. Is this a product of just more corners who are capable of doing so coming up to the pro level? Because a lot of these guys are young corners too, by the way. Or is it a product of defensive coordinators evolving here, going to more of these situations? Or is it a bit of both? Is it none of the above? I really don't know, but there were 13 different teams who used some form of shadow coverage in week one, which is a lot. So let's start with Mike Evans saw Benjamin St. Juiced in shadow. That one was not a challenge for Mike Evans. He did quite well in it. So, I mean, maybe Malik Nabers sees that matchup. I don't know if he does or not. If he does, okay. I'm not really overly concerned about it for him in that one. Moving on to Tariq Woolen up against Courtland Sutton. He did a really nice job against Sutton, and it does help explain why Sutton's day was somewhat quiet. Bo Nix was obviously a part of that too, but that is at least worth noting. Now, it doesn't get much better for Courtland Sutton because he's going to see Joey Porter Jr. this week. So keep that in mind for him. Sutton may end up being a nice buy low when this first stretch run of tough coverage matchups concludes. AJ Terrell was on George Pickens. Pickens had really no problem, and he only saw the two targets. It was 70% of his routes covered. He caught both, though, for 52 yards. And we could see AJ on AJ, Terrell on AJ Brown. AJ Brown saw Jaire Alexander last week in shadow coverage and just destroyed him. 71% routes covered, four catches for 108 yards, and a score on eight targets. That's pretty good. Speaking of Joey Porter, he was on Drake London last week and absolutely blanketed him. 60% of routes, 59 to be precise. One catch on one target for 7 yards for Drake London against Joey Porter Jr. Joey Porter Jr. is pretty stinking good. And, you know, as I just mentioned, we can expect that this week for Courtland Sutton. Deontay Banks was on Justin Jefferson. Jefferson really didn't have any problems in this matchup. They didn't have to do much. He was on him 64% of the time, two catches for 47 yards and a score on three targets. That will be very likely Terry McLaurin this week for Deontay Banks. And I'm not overly concerned for McLaurin. The bigger concern for McLaurin is Jaden Daniels and how much he throws the football. That's what we're keeping our eye on there. Moving on to, let's do the one situation that was almost 100%. That was Patrick Surtain on DK Metcalf. He was on him 96% of his routes. That's enormous. Like, we rarely see anybody over 90%. And that was the only one this past week. DK was quiet as a result. Now, is that one of those things that we should have seen coming? No, not necessarily. Like, the season-long fantasy folks who sweat wide receiver cornerback is, you know, honestly, that's something that I just wouldn't do. You know, these guys in the past will have, like, tough shadow situations. I've seen it for, like, Mike Evans. Mike Evans will go up against Marshawn Lattimore, like a classic shadow over the last several years. And sure, when he's against Lattimore, the 70% of his routes, he's relatively quiet. And then he puts up the rest of his points in the other 30% of his routes, and he ends up being a decent season-long option. See, the difference between season-long and DFS is in season-long, I want my midpoint or better. And that's what rankings and projections are. They're the midpoint of a wide range of expected outcomes. I want to be at the midpoint or better. And Mike Evans' midpoint, even in a tough matchup, is going to be higher than these, like, wide receiver three types. It is. Now, in DFS, I want ceiling. I don't give a crap about midpoint. Midpoint doesn't, you know, I don't cash with midpoints. I want the ceiling. Now, Mike Evans against Marshawn Lattimore is very unlikely, like in the past, I'm just still using that example, but is very unlikely to hit that ceiling. Whereas, you know, somebody in a much softer matchup would be much more likely to hit that ceiling. And so that's what I'm really keying in on when it comes to these sorts of things. Like, you know, I'm looking through and, you know, like, here's a classic one, Ronald Darby. You know, Amari Cooper, not that I'm endorsing Amari Cooper, but he's going to see a lot of Ronald Darby. He could pick on him. You know, he could pick on him. CeeDee Lamb against Alante Taylor in the slot. Like, he's not going to see Marshawn Lattimore. He's going to see a lot more Alante Taylor. All right. You know, I love that. He has a much better chance of hitting a ceiling than somebody in a tougher matchup. So that's why I always say that I'm using this stuff for DFS. L'Jarius Sneed, who is now, in case you missed it, on the Tennessee Titans, did shadow DJ Moore. Part of the reason why Moore was quiet, for sure. L'Jarius Sneed's quite good. One catch on four targets for 12 yards. Part of it was, you know, Caleb Williams is getting his sea legs here as a starting quarterback in the NFL. Christian Gonzalez was on Ja'Marr Chase. Chase caught four balls, only 25 yards against Gonzalez. Again, that was, you know, there were a lot of factors in that game. But Gonzalez will almost certainly be on DK Metcalf. And by the way, Gonzalez was close to 90%. It was 86% of the time that he was on Ja'Marr Chase. Stephon Gilmore shadowing Malik Nabers. Nabers caught one for 25 in that one. It was 55% of the routes. This was more Daniel Jones than it was Nabers or Gilmore or anything. So I wouldn't worry too much there. I actually really like the spot for Nabers this week against Washington. You know, a good chance of hitting his ceiling, you know, better chance than some of these other tougher matchups. Like, for example, DK Metcalf, don't love him in DFS this week. In season long, fine with using him. You know, if he's the highest ranked guy in that decision, I'm using him. Jalen Jones, Indianapolis, did shadow Nico Collins. Collins had no problem in that matchup. I was intrigued to see that was an actual shadow. J.C. Horn, Carolina, he actually did a nice job against Chris Olave. Now, it was only half of the routes, but he held Olave to one catch for negative 6 yards. They didn't really need to use Olave, so I'm not going to read too much into that one, but it's at least worth noting. Trent McDuffie shadowing Zay Flowers, 3 for 23. Now, this was a partial shadow. It wasn't the whole game. It was 44% of Flowers' routes, but I think we'll see that from time to time out of McDuffie. Now that L'Jarius Sneed is out of the mix, McDuffie's kind of the guy in that secondary there for the Kansas City Chiefs. So that is worth noting there as well. All right. So again, the only voicemail that came through was asking about an app. No app anytime soon. You can use the mobile function there. Use your browser, mobile function. I sound like an old man. You can use your browser on mobile. I tend to use the website on desktop. Like I said, it's better on mobile than it is on desktop, but it's good on both. Colton on the email account here has a question. So the rantpodjr@gmail.com. The title is Jordan Whittington 12-team PPR. I don't really care about the scoring format, but appreciate it, man. He said he's followed me since my Roto World days. Oh, that's a rare one right there. So I was at Roto World, 2013 to 2015? Might have been as far back as 2012. I'd have to look. But I honestly had to give up my job at Roto World, which I did not want to do because I loved working for Roto World, because I got offered full time at BFF after Chris Collinsworth came in. So, nice trade off. But it was bittersweet. Loved my time at Roto World. So that's awesome. Very few people have followed me from there. He said he went Hero RB, ended up with depth at wide receiver, and is looking at his wide receiver 6. So let me warn guys against that. If you're viewing your team as this is my wide receiver 1, this is my wide receiver 2, this is my wide receiver 3, and then so on all the way down to wide receiver 6, that's going to make your start sit decisions tougher because you're going to be operating within that framework. Let's say the guy who you think is at 6 ends up this week being 4. In other words, potentially flex worthy. Are you going to view him that way? I don't know. But I'm just tossing it out there. Like, I like to view my wide receivers as my wide receivers. I don't rank them, on my roster. That is, of course, I rank them in my rankings, but I don't rank them in my roster because any given week, it could be any of them who start. I'm going to start the highest ranked guys. So anyway, he said it's Mooney. He isn't in a great situation. Cousins isn't looking great. Well, it was 1 week. He said Cousins was held in the preseason and won't be running into TJ Watt every game. So maybe this week he figures it out. Okay, yeah. He said Nacua was his number 2, likes what he saw with the Rams. I've talked a few times about Jordan Whittington and wondering if I would mind talking more about him. Sure. So Whittington is a very interesting player, but he still has a barrier to entry. The barrier being, you have DeMarcus Robinson and then Tyler Johnson was the next man up out there, not Whittington. That could change this week, but given his roster, it looks like, this is really, this is a thin league, it looks like. He's got Tua, he's got 5 running backs, so that's 6. He's got 6 wideouts, that's 12. He's got 1 tight end, that's 13. So that is a thin bench league. You can't roster Whittington in this type of league. If you have 8 bench spots and your waivers is picked over and you really want to shoot for the moon on somebody, sure, roster him in that type of league. But in this type of league, can't roster a guy like that. Like, honestly, I'm looking at Colton's roster here and I don't see any moves that really need to be made. I mean, he has Brooks, which he's eating up a spot with a guy who's not going to play until at least week 5. But still, Whittington is just a deep ad. And so he says something in this email too. I'll read the last sentence or the second to last sentence here. He said, I feel like Whittington will eventually supplant Johnson before a Nacua return. I often say think, feel, believe, whatever you want in your life. But when it comes to fantasy, think, feel, believe doesn't get us very far. If you think something, if you feel something, if you believe something, oftentimes I find those words are synonymous for, yeah, I just have this thought, but I have no reason why. Right? Like, why do you feel that way? Do you have empirical evidence to get nerdy on you here. Do you have evidence to support why you would feel that way? Because my evidence as of right now is Whittington had a massive preseason, yet he's still behind Tyler Johnson. So that to me tells me he's much more of a dart throw, and I don't have evidence that would suggest anything other than that. You know, it's not as if Whittington was a first rounder or something like that. He's a fifth rounder. He was unheralded. Yeah, he had a hell of a preseason. But it's the regular season now. And when push came to shove, when the opportunity presented itself, who did they go to? Not Whittington. That's important. That's really important. So he's more of a speculative ad, not an ad for a league of this size right here. Appreciate the email. That's a good question, though, from Colton. I love these types of questions because it's more strategy than just would you pick this guy up or would you start this guy or whatever. Keep hitting us up, therantpodjr@gmail.com. FTNFantasy.com is the website. I'll be updating rankings plenty here, and we'll have them locked there for about 30 minutes out from the game tonight. So go check that out. Promo code RATPACK for 10% off. At Jeff Ratcliffe on Twitter, at Jeff Ratcliffe on Instagram. Tomorrow I'll be back with another edition of the pod. We'll preview the remaining games on the slate, plus a little recap of Thursday Night Football. Enjoy that game. I'll catch you tomorrow on the flip for another edition of the pod. I'm Jeff, and I'm out.